Willkommen auf der EduCouch, dem Podcast des Instituts für digitales Lernen. Hier diskutieren wir über Bildung. Und zwar mit Leuten, die etwas zu sagen haben, die die digitale Zukunft gestalten wollen, die der Gesellschaft den Spiegel vorhalten oder einfach mal nur dagegen sind. Wir glauben nicht mehr an die Schule der Vergangenheit und wollen die Bildung des 21. Jahrhunderts mitgestalten. Darum suchen wir Inspirationen und Menschen an Stellen, an denen sonst kaum jemand sucht. Zuhören, nachdenken, diskutieren. Und los geht's.
Welcome to the EduCouch podcast. This is actually our first talk in English. And today we have a special woman from Copenhagen on our virtual Zoom meeting couch. She's an author, economist, philosopher, and futurist. And one of her main topics is education. Welcome, Lene Rachel Andersen.
Thank you very much.
And the first question right away. You went to school in Denmark. And we Germans regard Denmark as an absolute school paradise. Happy, self-determined students and highly competent, likable teachers in tasteful knitted sweaters. Is this really the reality? Or how did you experience school in Denmark?
So I went to school in the 70s and all the knitted sweaters were horrible. So, I mean, we can dismiss that part of the hypothesis. But it is a very open-minded, holistic, broader perspective kind of educational system that we have here. And I would have to say, and that is why I wrote the book that I did, The Nordic Secret, that what is the foundation of the Danish school system, the way that I know it and the way that I grew up with it, is the German concept of Bildung, which is so much more than education. So we have a tremendous heritage in the Danish school system coming from Germany, and we popularized it and turned it into Folkbildung and our own version of it, but there's a lot of inspiration there. So that's also why I'm very happy to be able to approach a German audience, because there's so much connection here that we're not aware of. I wasn't even aware of it before I started working on this.
As a historian, I have another question. First of all, you described the Scandinavian countries as almost perfect role models for the radical changes of industrialization during the last 100 years. But you write that today, the ability to shape a transition into a new era has deteriorated significantly. What's wrong in Scandinavia? What happened?
We have started focusing on the testing and the traditional education approach that everybody else has. So, I mean, we're, instead of having this holistic approach, and by holistic, I do not mean it in a new age spiritual sense. I mean it in the sense where we look at the whole person and realize that the individual is not just a product that needs to go out into the workforce and make a living. We educate in order for people to become whole persons, strong personalities, having autonomy and being part of a society, and the whole democratic Bildung process, the formation process of the individual, has always been central in the Danish school system for the past 120 years. But that has changed. And so for the past 30 years, we have become increasingly focused on testing, on being in the, you know, top league of the PISA tests, and competing with the other countries on everything that you can measure. But the important parts you cannot measure. So the important parts, what is that? Well, it's the emotional development. It's the capability of taking responsibility. It's the capability of being a good friend and functioning in a classroom and playing an instrument and knowing your cultural heritage and having a broad and deep language and a deep emotional realm where you can, you know, find the knowledge and the deep knowledge, the emotions that you need whenever you're confronting a complicated situation. And so these are the things that we get through not math, not science, but through poetry and through storytelling and through knowing our history and, God forbid, having a religion from time to time. So there are all these aspects of life that go into Bildung, And that is why I prefer to talk about Bildung instead of education. I mean, I would be happy to talk about education and turn it into Bildung, because that should be the whole point with education. But getting this much broader understanding of what does it mean to be a human being, and what does it mean to be a child growing up in a culture where you need to be able to make sense of the society that you're in. And you can only make sense of the society that you're in if you have a sense of, oh, this thing comes from that, and that thing has this historical background. And oh, when they're singing this song in this context, this is the reason why. And the worst example I heard of somebody who did not have the Bildung to understand a thing like that was when somebody, it was a Twitter thing. I mean, you can't count on Twitter, but somebody at Twitter said, why are they playing the handball song at this event? And the handball song turned out to be the national anthem, but this person had only heard it at sports games. So that is what lack of Bildung does to you. You think like, what is this handball song doing in, I don't know if it was the church or like a royal event or whatever, but it was like, duh. I mean, if that is the only place you've ever heard the national anthem, how would you know any better? So, I mean, this is what schools are also there for, very much there for. And part of having a public school system is that we have to have a conversation about what is it important that all children understand when they are in school and when they leave school. I mean, there has to be variations between schools, and, you know, some neighborhoods fight with certain problems and other neighborhoods fight with other problems. And so, you have to focus your attention in different ways, but we also have to focus on creating conscientious citizens in our school system. And it sounds, I mean, when you say that you have to create a certain kind of people, that sounds wrong. But we don't create responsible citizens without, for instance, challenging worldviews, without presenting them with art and poetry and storytelling that makes them feel a little bit uncomfortable, but also stuff that makes them feel very comfortable. So, I mean, we have to, you know, use everything that we have in the cultural baggage that we carry with us and expose the children to it and have conversations about it and have them ask questions. And I think that is really crucial, that they get to, you know, learn how to approach whatever it is they're facing, whether it's art, culture, literature, a work situation, authorities, you know, institutions, bosses, that they learn to approach that with a critical mind, think for themselves, and in a polite way, ask, is this the right thing we're doing? Or did I understand this right if I understood it in this way? Or couldn't we do it in another way? And that takes, I mean, first of all, it takes that you have background knowledge, but it also takes the habit of knowing that my voice counts. And I think that has been very much the approach in the Danish school system.
Okay.
And I also know that that the schools, the Danish schools in the Schleswig-Holstein are very popular because of this Danish tradition that we have in the school system. So we have little footholds in the German educational system, I think. But these, yeah. I don't know if they're private schools or whatever. But it's there is this approach to education in Denmark, and we have sort of been sliding away from it, unfortunately.
I obviously like what you're saying, but critical people would say that within your book, the terms happiness, meaning, freedom run through. Mm. And isn't that something too hippie? Don't we need the real stuff? Also the real stuff, the hard facts?
Of course we do. But they go hand in hand. And in order to be a responsible citizen and have freedom, you need to be able to find a job and provide for yourself in the existing, not just economy, but society. And so, of course, we need that. And part of the Bildung and part of having that is also that you have to I mean, if you learn physics and other science, math, and you learn about new technologies and all the stuff that we can all agree, even with the PISA testing, that we need to know this. The way that you challenge that and get critical thinking into that, and where you become an employee who can think beyond the job that somebody has or the task that somebody has given you, is if you have a much broader frame of reference so that you can think, okay, so they told me to build this, let's say, nuclear bomb, and I'm the physicist who can do that, but maybe I should approach my, you know, knowledge about philosophy, ethics, storytelling, history, and wonder if this is really a great idea. And the same thing with, you know, nanotechnologies and social media and surveillance cameras and drones and all these things, where any country right now would just love to win the global competition of having the most advanced technology in AI. And we need scientists and people who develop technology and politicians who start thinking, maybe there is a broader perspective to this. Maybe there are bigger issues than just having the fastest AI and the most advanced nanotechnology. Maybe we should start looking at, how does this affect human dignity? The hippie stuff, all the stuff that we get up in the morning in order to enjoy. There may be people who get up in the morning in order to join math and science. I know some of those people, but most people get up in the morning in order to enjoy freedom and beauty and good meals with their family and the hippie stuff. So, or religion and all the, you know, conservative stuff. But it's, I mean, this is why, that is what makes life meaningful. And we need to help children find those things that make life meaningful. And we particularly need to offer that to all children so that they get more than their own family would provide them with. And there are a number of reasons for this. One is that not all children fit right in with the family within which they were born and grow up, and they need challenges and new approaches to life, and they need to be able to see things that their parents aren't showing them in order to thrive. But we also, as a society, need to be able to communicate with each other. And if I grew up as a, you know, a deeply religious person in a very conservative family, when I'm 30 years old and am in a workplace, even though I may still be this very conservative religious person, I need to be able to understand what my colleagues in the, you know, cafeteria are talking about over lunch. And they, on the other hand, also need to understand where I'm coming from. Otherwise, we can't have a meaningful conversation. So we need to understand the other people in our society. And therefore, we need schools that provide all children and young people with broad knowledge into all aspects of the civilization that we're in. And that, I mean, that is the foundation for having a democratic conversation and having democratic institutions and a functioning democracy.
Yes, so this is a very good transition to the next question. You complain, as I do, about an educational deficit among decision makers in politics and society. What do you think these people have to know and be able to do in order to shape the future? So what's going wrong and what could be a solution?
I mean, here I would like to draw the attention to a model that is not in the Nordic Secret, but I call it the Bildungsrose. And if you Google the Bildungsrose, you'll find a website for it and you'll find the illustration. So the Bildungsrose is a model describing society in seven domains. And the seven domains are production, so that's food and shelter, it's technology, so that's everything from, you know, historically from the Stone Axe to nanotechnology and biotechnology today. Then there's science. We need science in order to be able to describe the world and understand the world. There's power, political power. So that's all the institutions. It's the police, courts, legislation, parliaments, all that stuff. Then there's aesthetics. We need things that are beautiful. We thrive when we're in beautiful settings. And this is a an aspect of life that has really become sort of the luxury, the icing on the cake, and where nobody is willing to spend any money, and all artists are sort of better artists if they can't provide, you know, food for their children. It doesn't work like that, but that's the political attitude in many places. Then there's narrative, which is anything from religious narrative, the moral narratives that are guiding us in familiar situations and where we have the cultural heritage, but it can also be political ideology or the factual history. So what did actually happen before we got to the place where we are today? And then there's ethics. And ethics is the way that I define it in this building rose, the guiding principles when we are in unfamiliar situations. So moral values and religious storytelling and all that stuff, they tell us how to behave ourselves, or how to behave, what kind of decisions to make in familiar situations, whereas ethics are the principles where we haven't really explored this situation before, and now we have to go even deeper into our values in order to find out what would be the right thing to do. So, for instance, human rights is part of our ethics, and they're so general, they're principles, and they try to be so general that in any situation we're finding ourselves in, we can go take a look at the human rights and see, oh, which one can we use here and which principle can we put into practice here? And then it becomes a moral value, and suddenly it's not okay anymore to, for instance, beat your children or, keep women out of the workplace or things like that. So our moral values are changing, but they're usually changing by, you know, a new situation appearing. What are we going to do about this? And then we go to our deeper principles and say, so which principle here, which ethical value would be the one that we can apply to our civilization, our culture, our society right now? So the building rose shows these seven domains. And I would say anybody, not just, decision makers, should take a look at these seven domains and honestly ask themselves, so where am I focusing? Do I really understand all these domains? Am I capable of, you know, having a polite conversation at a dinner party within any one of these domains? Or am I just, you know, going completely blank if somebody starts talking about the arts and aesthetics? And I'm like, uh-oh, I heard a pop song on the radio the other day, but what am I going to say to this opera singer who, like, is, you know, world famous, and I'm sitting right next to this person for 3 hours dining? Well, not now because of the corona, but soon you will again. Or you're meeting somebody who's like, working in construction and who is a really good artisan as a carpenter or something. And how do you keep up a conversation with a person like that if you're a professor of nanotechnology and you've never set a foot outside of your lab? So in order to have conversations with people from other strata of our own society, we need to have this broad Allgemeinbildung that allows us to, you know, understand where other people are coming from and to explore, be curious about what this life look like for other people in different situations. And of course, if you are a decision maker, particularly if you're in politics where you kind of have to cover all of society, you really need to understand all of those domains. And I can bring them, and this is Denmark right now, corona era, where as everything was shut down and the government was creating rescue packages for, you know, everybody who had a steady job in the industries, in the service sector, anybody with a regular paycheck every month, there were all these programs so much help to get. But then all the musicians, all the artists, everybody working as sound engineers in concerts, all the theaters, everybody who work in a different way and who may have a 2-year production planning period where they are borrowing money until they have an audience, which may be there for 2 months if you're lucky. Many shows just run for 2 weeks because then anybody who's interested in that particular kind of music or theater have watched the show. And so all of these people are being, you know, either freelancing or, you know, paid a salary on borrowed money or whatever. And the government was like, and it was actually the Minister of Culture who said, I don't think we should start talking about culture now when people are dying. I was like, we're not, first of all, culture is what makes this whole thing meaningful. I mean, this is where we can actually meet. And there's been a tremendous demand for, singing and listening to music and watching satire. And all of these cultural products have been, in so much demand. But all of the, the whole industry of music, theater, everything, people have, started working as unskilled labor in kindergartens, and whoever had a bit of savings has spent that, and it's just the government has still not figured out how to help the sector. So we have very different modes of operating within those seven domains, and if we're going to function as a society, particularly with the current technological development, we need people, decision makers, particularly decision makers, but really all of us, to understand broader perspective on society. And one of the reasons this isn't just for the decision makers is that in a democracy, we need a populace who actually vote for the people who understand this. So we also need an educated, gebildet population who is willing to, explore new stuff and broaden their mind and be curious about the development, and also engage in the broader society, and not just, if you're like really into pop music or rap music or any kind of music, you have to look at other things as well. So that would be my answer to that.
Two more questions I'll have for you. You are a member of the Club of Rome. What are your goals and your tasks there? Why are you a member of the Club of Rome?
My goals and tasks there, it's a club of 100 people. We call it thought leaders. And it's a very broad group of people from sciences, different kinds of sciences, from the industry, of various kinds, and from politics. Usually it's retired politicians. You cannot be a member if you're still in office anywhere, and diplomats. So people who work internationally. And the beginning of the establishment of the Club of Rome was by some systems thinkers who were thinking about global development, technological development, economic development, human development as a connected system. So the members are people who think about global development from a holistic perspective and a systems perspective. And the reason I was invited in, I haven't asked actually, so I do not know, but I'm pretty certain that the reason why I was invited in was because I wrote The Nordic Secret. I wrote it together with a Swedish colleague, Thomas Björkman, who's also a member of the Club of Rome. And the reason is that in the Club of Rome, there's a growing realization that we need Bildung. Need globally a different kind of education and a school system, around the globe for everybody. And we're not just talking Europe now. We're talking the globe. We're a species who need Bildung, and we need cultural heritage that is rooted locally combined with an understanding of what it means to be a democratic nation. Right now, the nation state is where democracy works, wherever it works, that it's at the national level and, of course, also at the municipal level. So within the nation states, and one of the reasons why it works at the nation state level and has tremendous challenges at, for instance, the continental plane level, is because of language. You and I can have a conversation now in English because somebody was kind enough to teach us English. But your language is German, mine is Danish. And if we did not speak English to each other, we could not have this conversation. So the European Union is depending on everybody in Europe being bilingual somehow so that we can actually communicate. But we don't have that. So part of education right now, and one of the challenges that we're facing as we're connecting globally through the internet, is that everybody needs to be able to communicate with each other. So right now, at the nation state level, that is where we can, in fact, do that in most places around the globe, because there is an official language of that country where you can have a democratic conversation. But then, of course, we do need the continents to work, and we also need the globe to work. So part of the Bildung that we need from now on and in all eternity is to be able to understand the world in different, what's called group sizes. So I need to be a good and conscientious friend and colleague at the workplace. I need to be active in my local community. I need to be a good citizen in my country. I need to be a good citizen in my continent. And I need to be a good citizen of the world. And that is a Bildung challenge. And we have not set up our school systems for this. But somehow we have to do that.
Okay.
And so the Club of Rome, that's where your question came from. So I think the Club of Rome invited me in because I've been writing about this and I've been very explicit about this. And I, you know, have some ideas about what that entails and what could be the approaches to it. I'm not an industrialist who owns a factory and has €1 billion in the bank.
Oh,
ah, yeah.
So sad.
Damn. Oh. Yeah.
Damn it.
Sorry.
Damn it! Damn it! I'll take all the money and change the world. No,
yeah, I mean, I'm just working in education and building. I mean, yeah. Duh.
I know the problem. Last question. Which question would you like to have answered that I unfortunately didn't ask today?
Yeah, so that would be the connection between Denmark and the German heritage of Bildung, because I think that is really crucial. And the short version is that the Bildung that Herder and Goethe and Schiller and Fichte and von Humboldt and Hegel wrote about 230 years ago was all, you know, developed, co-created is the modern word, in Jena and Weimar. And it traveled to Denmark in 1802 and created this, like, mind-blowing experience. They were also exploring the romanticism and the spirit and nature, Geist, and the Geist in a person that interacts with the culture around a person. And then this Geist in the people goes back into the person and shapes, builds that person. So we're in this constant loop of exchange of ideas and words and feelings and, you know, all kinds of stuff, symbols. And this whole philosophy then, of course, shapes romanticism and romantic nationalism, travels to Denmark in 1802, and it's mind-blowing to the Danish bourgeoisie. And there's a pastor, and his name is Grundtvig. And if you're engaged in education at the European level, you will know the Grundtvig program under, like, the Erasmus program. So this guy, Grundtvig, is a pastor, and he realizes that this Bildung concept of Geist and Geist in a people that these Germans are talking about, they're just talking about it for the bourgeoisie. The people who need this, or actually the people who are carrying the Geist of a people, are the peasants. They know all the old fairy tales and the traditions and the songs and stuff. And the bourgeoisie, who are at the time the bureaucracy and administrators of Denmark, they're actually just speaking German among each other. So they have to change that and start speaking Danish. And so he creates this whole idea of Folkbildung, where first he conceptualizes it as a high school for the bourgeoisie who have to learn Danish and administer in Danish. Eventually they do that. But he also realizes that we need to lift the peasants from the bottom, intellectual bottom of society, and into a political awareness. They need to understand that they're now becoming citizens of a country, and they need to understand what that country is. And they also need to understand modern science so that they can understand the industrialization that is going on. They need to learn to new agricultural techniques and a bit of macroeconomics so that they can function in society at all levels. And they need to know their history and aesthetics. And so he suggests the concept of folk high schools, which is then, first is in 1844. The one that becomes a success is in 1851, started by a school teacher named Christian Kolb. And then it becomes a movement in 1865 after Bismarck has beaten the jeebies out of us. And we focus on how do we maintain the Danish spirit now that Mr. Bismarck took a third of the country. So there's a whole border conflict between Germany and Denmark that went into this and created this national sense of awareness and focus on what it means to be a modern state. And so what is interesting about this, because now we're getting extremely close to nationalism. And what is really interesting about this and why this did not become a national chauvinism, but became an open-minded love of country and care about the country and involvement in the country, is because of Bildung. Because what people learned and what they got from this was not a top-down sort of feeding all the right answers into their head and telling them you must love your country. What they got was the history of the country, and then they were encouraged to ask questions. And in that question asking, they found out what was important in the country and what was important to themselves and how they could interact with other people. And they, you know, came to a point where they're like, I can take responsibility for this and be curious about what goes on in the rest of the world as well. And so we have so much to thank the German philosophers and the relationship to this great culture for. But we also did turn it into, we gave it a different kind of flavor. And it's, I think the one of the things that we're very known for in Denmark and the other Nordic countries, we exported these folk high schools to Norway, Sweden, and Finland. So one of the things that we are very known for in the Nordic countries is a low power distance. And this low power distance was created by lifting the bottom of society with Bildung. So that would be the thing that I would love a question about.
As you have answered this question now, everything is fine. I thank you a lot for this very interesting talk. I highly recommend your book, and I wish you a very nice weekend.
Well, thank you, and the same to you. Thank you.